Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Okay, so let's dive into what has been, for a long time, a pretty profound mystery in neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
Epilepsy affects millions of people all over the world, and for decades, we've had these crucial drugs like levetiracetam. They're lifesavers.
Absolutely.
And we've known what they target, a protein called SV2A, right in the brain's synaptic machinery. It's like, we knew the building address for the drug.
But the actual architecture of that building, it was a complete black box. I mean, earlier structural studies showed levetiracetam binding to SV2A, but the protein didn't really seem to change shape. It just sat there.
It just sat there. And that was the huge contradiction. How can a drug have such a powerful effect if it isn't forcing some kind of major molecular change in its target?
That feels deeply unsatisfying, right? You'd think a drug for something like epilepsy, which is all about hyperactive signaling, would need to be a physical intervention. It should be jamming the mechanism.
It has to be. It had to be forcing the protein into some kind of sealed, immobile state, but we couldn't see it.
And that's why this is so exciting.
Exactly. This new high-resolution study we're digging into finally captures this hidden conformational dance. It shows the drug doesn't just bind, it physically locks the protein down.
And it goes even further. This work has uncovered a really sophisticated allosteric modulation mechanism, a hidden secondary pocket.
A physical cap, basically. It provides a whole new roadmap for designing the next generation of anti-seizure medications, or ASMs.
Before we get into those incredible details, we should really give a shout out to the team that pulled this off.
Oh, absolutely. This is a massive effort.
We're talking about the work of Shabarish Padathla and a huge collaboration. It spans St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the National University of Singapore, the Rockefeller University, and UT Southwestern Medical Center.
And you can't overstate the technical achievement here. Getting sub-3 angstrom resolution for a tricky membrane protein like SE2A, that's monumental. It really pushes our entire understanding forward, not just for this one protein, but for the whole family it's in.
The major facilitator superfamily.
That's the one.
So let's frame this protein, SV2A. Where does it fit in the grand scheme of things?
Okay, so SV2A is a key member of the major facilitator superfamily, the MFS. And this is the biggest group of what are called solute carrier or SLC transporters.
And MFS transporters they're everywhere and they're central to life, right? I think they're the second largest family of human membrane proteins.
Second only to G protein coupled receptors. They're basically the cell's gatekeepers, moving nutrients, waste, signals all across the membrane. And to do that, they have to constantly be changing shape.
Which is the crucial context here.
It is. In the brain, SV2A is wildly abundant. You find up to a dozen copies in almost every synaptic vesicle in every neuron.
So it's got to be vital for neurotransmission.
You'd think so. But here's the kicker. We still don't know for sure what its natural cargo is. We see the carrier, but we don't know what it's carrying.
Even with that mystery, its clinical importance is just... It's undeniable. SV2A is a huge deal in neuroimaging.
A huge deal. A ligand called UCBJ, which we'll get to in a minute, is used as a PE tracer. It literally lights up synaptic density in the brain, which is essential for tracking diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
And then, of course, the direct link to epilepsy.
The genetic evidence is just overwhelming. If you knock out the SV2A gene in mice, they have severe fatal seizures. And in humans, certain mutations are linked directly to intractable epilepsy.
Making it the perfect target.
The perfect high-stakes target for all these racetam-based drugs, especially levetiracetam.
So just to sum up the problem they faced, you have this incredibly important dynamic protein that has to change shape to work.
Mm-hmm.
But every time we took a picture of it with the drug bound, it looked static, it looked frozen, it contradicted how we thought this whole family of transporters was supposed to behave.
Exactly. And that's what this team set out to fix. To resolve that discrepancy and to hunt for any hidden, you know, allosteric regulation, a secondary switch that no one had ever seen before for SV2A.
So how did they do it? How did they finally get this protein to show its moves?
The main technique was cryo-electron microscopy cryo-EM. That's what got them the sub-3 angstrom resolution. the detail you need to see exactly where the atoms are.
But the real game changer was how they prepared the sample.
Right.
That was the key to seeing the flexibility.
That was the absolute key. Look, if you want to see how a car dries, you can't weld it to a metal stand.
Right.
And the standard method, using what are called detergent micelles, is kind of like that. It's a soapy bubble that can sometimes restrict a protein's natural movement.
Which is probably why those earlier studies came up empty.
It's very likely. So what this team did was they reconstituted the protein into something called Siposin nanoparticles.
Okay.
Think of it as a more natural, flexible sort of fat-based wrapper. It gave the protein room to breathe, room to move like it would in its native environment.
That makes so much sense. You trick it into acting normally so you can finally catch it in the act of opening and closing.
And they didn't just rely on the pictures. They backed it all up with functional assays, radioligand binding, to correlate the structures they were seeing with actual pharmacological function. They tied the image directly to the activity.
Which brings us to the core finding, the solution. What actually happens when the drug binds?
We finally saw it. Ligand-induced occlusion. So the APO state, that's the protein with no drug, is an illumin-open state. It's open towards the inside of the vesicle, ready to go.
But when you add levetiracetam,
the protein shifts dramatically. It snaps shut into an occluded conformation. This had never been seen before for SV2A, but it is the absolute hallmark of an MFS transporter caught in the middle of its cycle.
So the drug isn't just a gentle tap. It's a wedge that forces the door shut and holds it there.
That's a great way to put it.
And what's the mechanism? What moves?
You see this large inward movement of one of the protein's helices, transmembrane helix 1 or TM1. This whole segment shifts, and that causes a key residue, phenylalanine 188.
T188.
Right, phe-188, to swing in and act like a seal. It's like a plug that completely collapses that central cavity.
There it is, the mechanism of action.
Yeah.
The drug works by locking the transporter in a sealed, non-functional state.
Precisely.
Okay, now let's compare the two drugs that bind this main site, the orthosteric site. You have levetiracetam, the classic drug, and then the PET tracer, UCBJ.
Right, and UCBJ binds to the same basic spot, but its affinity is. It's off the charts. It binds nearly 1,000 times stronger than levetiracetam.
1,000 times? Why such a massive difference?
It really just comes down to the chemistry. UCBGA has these bulkier chemical groups, these extra bits that stick out and can engage with additional residues deeper inside the pocket.
So it has more anchor points.
Exactly. More anchor is giving it that huge boost in affinity.
Okay, but hang on. This feels a little counterintuitive. If UCBJ binds so much more tightly, shouldn't it create an even tighter seal, a more complete occlusion?
Ah, and that's where it gets really elegant, and it shows you the nuance of drug design. Levetiracetam, the smaller drug, causes complete occlusion. It totally seals the cavity shut.
And the stronger binder?
The bulkier UCBJ. It only causes partial occlusion.
That's fascinating. So its own bulk gets in the way of the protein closing as tightly as it could?
It seems so. It's anchored in there so tightly, but its own structure sort of props the door open a tiny bit. It proves that it's not just about binding strength, it's about the exact shape you force the protein into.
The geometry.
The geometry. And that realization leads us right to the biggest discovery here, the allosteric site.
The hidden secondary switch. Tell us about this other compound, UCB1244283.
Right. So this compound was known to be a potentiator. It boosts the binding of other SV2A ligands, and the structure showed it binds to a completely separate site, about 13 angstroms away from that main pocket.
So it's not competing, it's helping from a distance. What does it actually do?
It acts like a kinetic cap. The functional data showed it dramatically slows down how quickly the main drug falls off the protein.
Because it traps it there.
It traps it. They measured the dissociation half-life for UCBJ, and with this allosteric modulator present, that time more than doubled. It jumped from 2 minutes to over 5 minutes.
Wow, so it's not about binding tighter initially, but about extending its stay. It keeps the original drug on target, working for longer, by physically blocking its escape.
And you can see it in the structure. It sits right on top of the main site, physically holding that occluded state in place and just sterically hindering the main ligand from getting out. It's holding the door shut from the outside.
Which brings us to this other experimental drug, Padcevinol. The puzzle with that one was that it bound with super high affinity, but the potentiator, that kinetic cap, it couldn't boost its effect at all.
Yeah, and no one knew why.
But the structure solves it instantly.
Instantly. It's one of those beautiful aha moments.
Yeah.
Padcevinol is a dual binder.
One molecule hits both spots.
Yes. A single molecule. It's just large enough that one end slots into the main orthosteric site and the other end reaches up and occupies the new allosteric site all at once.
So, It brings its own kinetic cap.
It brings its own cap. That's why adding another one had no effect. The space was already taken. It's perfect proof of direct competition at that secondary site.
The implications here feel massive and way beyond just epilepsy. What does this mean for the whole field of MFS transporters?
Well, first, it puts to rest any idea that SV2A is some kind of weird static exception. It is a fully dynamic MFS transporter, and these drugs work by interrupting its natural cycle.
And for anyone designing drugs, discovering this allosteric site must feel like finding a whole new continent.
It's a new regulatory layer, for sure. And maybe the most compelling part is what they call conditional engagement.
Meaning
the allosteric binder, UCB1244283, it didn't bind well on its own. It needed the primary drug, like levetiracetam, to already be sitting in the main pocket.
Okay, so the secondary pocket only really forms or becomes stable after the first drug is in place.
Exactly. And think what that means. You could design a modulator that is functionally inert, that does nothing, unless the primary medication is already on board. That gives you incredible specificity.
It's like a drug with a safety switch. It only engages when and where it's supposed to. That could cut down on so many off-target effects.
And there's even a roadmap for selectivity between different protein isoforms. They looked at the allosteric site in SV2A versus its cousin SV2B.
Then they're different.
They are. In SV2A, a key residue in that pocket is a leucine. But in SV2B, the same spot has a bigger amino acid, a glutamine.
A small change, but a big difference in the space available.
A huge difference. That bigger glutamine in SV2B might physically block a modulator from ever binding. And that gives you a structural blueprint for designing drugs that only hit SV2A, avoiding any side effects from hitting SV2B or other isoforms.
So if we boil this whole deep dive down, we really have two massive takeaways. First, the core mechanism for these anti-seizure drugs is physically forcing the SV2A protein into a sealed, locked-down state.
Mm-hmm. And second, there's this previously hidden allosteric pocket that works as a conditional kinetic cap, which can dramatically extend the time that primary drug stays on target and active.
It changes how we should think about efficacy. It's not just about binding strength anymore. It's about binding duration.
It really is.
Yeah.
And given that MFS transporters are the second largest family of human membrane proteins, and so many are targets for drugs, it leaves you with a pretty provocative question. Could these conditional allosteric caps be the key? Could this be a universal principle we can use to make better, more specific drugs for dozens of diseases?
This deep dive was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this deep dive and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
There's a hallway in the dark of a living cell where a whisper turns the volume down and rings a bell. Hands on the wheel, heart on the wire. One small latch can stop a whole wildfire. Freeze a moment, rid the frame, watch the hinges, learn a name when the gate swings in. The noise gets tame. Close the vestibule, let the storm roll past. Hold the occluded state, make the silence last. One key in the center. Up above, allosteric mercy, orchestral.
Prove me.